This is VOA News. I'm Victor Beatty. Iran's foreign minister has dismissed a new U.S. campaign designed to sow discord among the Iranian people. Mohammad Javad Zarif hitting back in a tweet by President Donald Trump, who Sunday said Tehran risked dire consequences if it threatened the U.S. Zarif responded by tweeting, "Color us unimpressed." At the White House, presidential spokesperson Sarah Huckabee Sanders said Mr. Trump was responding to a weekend warning by Iranian President Hassan Rouhani that Washington's hostile policies could lead to the mother of all wars.
The president's been, I think, pretty strong since day one in his language towards Iran. He was responding to comments made from them, and he's going to continue to focus on the safety and security of American people.
Mr. Rouhani also held out the hope of peace with the U.S. Sanders was asked if Mr. Trump could reach out to Iran as he did with North Korea.
That would be a determination that the president would make on what that looks like. But the ultimate goal and the focus of the president is making sure that we keep nuclear weapons out of their hands and that we focus on the protection of Americans.
Indiana University analyst Hussein Benai said the war of words gives rise to tensions that could result in conflict.
More importantly, I think it opens a door to third-party spoilers like Israel or Saudi Arabia to really seize this opportunity to really draw the Iranians or the Americans into open military conflict.
The U.S. is preparing to reimpose sanctions on Tehran after leaving the international nuclear agreement. Rwanda hosted two world leaders Monday, China's President Xi Jinping signing a series of deals involving loans and grants. India's Prime Minister Modi was welcomed by President Paul Kagame.
This visit, the first by the Indian Prime Minister, represents a milestone in the long-standing friendship and cooperation between Rwanda and India.
This is VOA News. An Israeli official is quoted as saying his government has rejected a new Russian offer to keep Iranian forces in Syria away from the Golan Heights. Israel has demanded all Iranian forces leave Syria. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu hosted talks Monday with Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov. Meanwhile, Damascus condemned the Israeli operation to evacuate hundreds of so-called White Helmet rescue workers, calling it a criminal operation. More than 400 will pull out Saturday to Jordan as pro-regime forces consolidate their hold in the southwest. A stone weighing 100 kilograms fell from the ancient Western Wall in Jerusalem, narrowly missing a worshiper. Yisrael Hassan, chairman of the Israel Antiquities Authority, said the stone fell as a result of natural erosion of the 2,000-year-old structure. A part of the wall has been closed off to the public. The incident occurred just one day after tens of thousands converged to visit the Western Wall. In Greece, at least 20 people have been killed, more than 100 injured, as a wildfire sweeps through populated areas of the east near Athens. Prime Minister Alexis Tsipras said this is a difficult moment for the Attica region. He said hundreds of firefighters and vehicles have been mobilized. The country has appealed to the European Union for additional firefighting assets. At the same time, Sweden is battling more than two dozen active fires, while blazes continue to threaten Yosemite National Park in California. In Somalia, al-Shabaab militants claim to have killed more than two dozen soldiers Monday as jihadists stormed a military base north of the regional capital, Kismayo. The state news agency said nearly 90 of the militant fighters were killed. Neither could be independently confirmed. The International Monetary Fund has warned that Venezuela's inflation rate could top 1,000,000% by year's end, liken it to a post-World War I Germany or Zimbabwe in the last decade. Jeff Ramsey is a Venezuela analyst at the Washington office on Latin America.
The Venezuelan government does not have a handle on its own economy. Hyperinflation is running rampant. People are seeing their savings, wiped out in a matter of weeks. I think the situation is very serious.
The IMF warned the collapse of economic activity, hyperinflation, and increasing deterioration will lead to intensifying spillover effects on neighboring countries. On Wall Street, rising bond yields are seen by investors as a sign of a strengthening U.S. economy. That helps send prices higher, the S&P 500 index adding 5 points to 2806. Shares of Google parent Alphabet exceeded expectations in the second quarter. That boosted after-hours trading. Sales of existing U.S. homes fell for a third month in a row in June, pushing prices to an all-time high. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty, Washington. Today's Tuesday, July 24th. And here are some of the stories we are covering. Zimbabwe's electoral body promises a secret ballot, but some voters are concerned about manipulation.
I think there might be a certain level of mistrust about the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission, but that is a very long-standing issue, especially since the 2000 election.
Sibusiso Nkomo is Afrobarometer's Deputy Operations Manager for Communications. We'll hear the prediction of one analyst about the possible outcome of the July 30th Zimbabwe vote. Today could mark the official end to recent Ebola outbreak in the DRC. And a Nigerian official says the country is safe for today under President Buhari.
When we came in on the 29th of May 2015, 24 local governments was under the effective occupation of Boko Haram. Today, not one single inch of Nigerian territory is under the occupation of Boko Haram.
Lau Mohammed is Nigeria's information minister and what's killing Africa's iconic baobab trees. Those stories plus our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Zimbabwe's Electoral Commission said Monday that all votes cast during the July 30th general election will be secret. Past elections in Zimbabwe have been marred by accusations of rigging to favor the ruling ZANU-PF party. Sebastian Mofu reports from Harare.
The deputy chair of the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission, Emmanuel Magade, spoke to journalists, diplomats and observers Monday as part of a credibility-building exercise.
My assurance to this audience is that the primacy of the secrecy...
He says, my assurance to this audience is that the secrecy of the vote will not be compromised. My own personal opinion is that the question of secrecy of the vote is non-negotiable, he added. That is the assurance that I'm giving to the international community, and that is assurance that I'm giving to the good people of Zimbabwe. The promises came as the main opposition party, the Movement for Democratic Change Alliance, said it would embark on mass demonstrations Tuesday should the commission fail to meet MDC demands to ensure that every vote counts. The MDC says the Electoral Commission is trying to rig the vote for the ruling ZANU-PF party, just as it allegedly did for the party during the rule of former President Robert Mugabe. MDC and Commission officials are expected to meet Tuesday to discuss the presidential ballot, which the opposition says was designed by the electoral panel to give an unfair advantage to President Emmerson Mnangagwa. The MDC is also seeking the nullification of votes by some police officers who were forced to cast ballots in front of their superiors. The opposition has already approached Zimbabwe's electoral court with urgent applications over the same issues and to order the elections body to release the actual voters' roll to be used in the elections. The opposition says it wants to check for voter fraud, which they said occurred under Mugabe's 37-year rule, which lasted last November. Mnangagwa, who succeeded Mugabe, maintained last week that the election would be free, fair, credible and transparent. He challenged the opposition to approach the courts if it doubted the Zimbabwe's Electoral Commission's professionalism. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
Prospective Zimbabwean voters have expressed concern that there could be violence during and after the July 30th general election. According to the latest Afro Barometer survey, Zimbabweans also say they remain apprehensive that next Monday's presidential election could be manipulated. The poll also showed that the ongoing presidential campaign has yet to inspire confidence among prospective voters. Still, a majority of voters say they are optimistic the election will be credible. For more about this survey, VOA's Peter Clotter reached Sibusiso Nkomo, Afrobarometer's Deputy Operations Manager for Communications in Cape Town, South Africa.
What we're finding is the fear of electoral violence is actually declined slightly, but it does remain high. Zimbabweans who actually fear becoming victims of electoral violence has actually declined by 8 points since May. But, you know, it's still, I think it's too many people who are saying they are afraid that something might go wrong in terms of their own safety. The other one is actually being apprehensive about electoral manipulation. I would put it this way, significant minorities are saying that they're worried about their ballot secrecy, their counting of votes and announcements of incorrect results, actually. But also some people fear that there might be post-election violence and the military not accepting election results. So it's a mixed bag in a sense, but Zimbabweans generally talk about high levels of fear compared to the rest of the region.
Some people say in Zimbabwe that the president, Emmerson Mnangagwa, has promised the elections will be peaceful and that security agents would ensure there's no intimidation, among other concerns that they may have. You are saying that those assurances did not affect the way people still see how things might go in this elections?
I think that's a difficult question for us to answer, because obviously what is happening around people affects what they might say. But from our data that we have, I can't tell whether it's that or something else. So all I can tell you is what Zimbabweans told us on the ground when we spoke to them between the 25th of June and the 6th of July. It might have changed by now. And also, you know, the election is in less than 2 weeks. So it's always, I think people need to keep in mind that what we say about from the survey is taken from that point in time, and that's what people thought at that point in time.
Talk to me about concerns they have about the election management, because the senior officials of the Electoral Commission are saying they have implemented measures to ensure the management is free, fair, transparent, and credible. But what did you find in the latest poll that you came up with?
Okay, so for instance, when it comes to election information, most Zimbabweans, especially in urban areas, find, not only urban areas, but even in rural areas, a large proportion of people find out about the information from government television and government radio. In terms of knowledge about procedures, it seems over 9 in 10 actually say that they know what the procedure is. So I think from a citizen perspective, they know what they need to do when they get there. I think there might be a certain level of mistrust about the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission, but that is a very long-standing issue that has always popped up when elections have taken place, especially since the 2000 election and 2008.
Sibusiso Nkomo is Afrobarometer's Deputy Operations Manager for Communications. He spoke with viewers Peter Clotty from Cape Town, South Africa. A renowned political analyst says it is likely that President Emmerson Mnangagwa will win Zimbabwe's presidential elections, despite a recent poll indicating that the race is too close to call. Professor Shadrack Guto of the University of South Africa says Mnangagwa appears to be having an upper hand over his rivals. But according to Afrobarometer, the presidential election will provide no clear winner, with 40% of voters choosing President Mnangagwa and 37% his opponent Nelson Chamisa. But Professor Guto says Mnangagwa has promised to make Zimbabwe a better country, though many locals are complaining about lack of transparent voters' role and other electoral issues.
He has promised a lot. I think he has opened the space, a democratic space, by first of all dealing with the whole question of land, dealing with the question of race, inviting former white farmers who left their farms or whose farms were taken to go back. And I think he's sending the right messages in those areas. He's also, I think, opening up space for freedom of speech or expression in the country, which I think is very, very important. So there are many areas where I think he's trying to open the doors. The opposition, on the other hand, in Zimbabwe, are also really trying desperately to organize themselves and realign their approach to politics. The MDC coalition is trying to get other smaller parties to join it so that they can have significant power to deal with Emmerson Mnangagwa and ZANU-PF. The situation is fluid. It is very difficult to be able to say whether or not, you know, they will convince the electorate. It's not just political leaders getting together and saying we are going to form a coalition as we move towards elections. It's also, do people really believe it or not?
Shadra Gutto is the political analyst at the University of South Africa. He spoke from Johannesburg with Gabe Dube of VOA's Zimbabwe service. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Tuesday, July 24th. Please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is 16 minutes past the hour. Nigeria's Minister of Information says the country today is much safer than when the Buhari government inherited it from the then President Goodluck Jonathan in 2015. President Muhammadu Buhari is seeking re-election in the February 2019 elections, but critics led by main opposition People's Democratic Party, the PDP, have accused the government of incompetence in dealing with the insecurity in the country. Opposition has threatened to boycott the election if the violence is not brought under control. But Information Minister Lau Mohammed says the Buhari government has reclaimed all territories once under the control of Boko Haram. He described the opposition as weak and lack of ideas. Mohammed encourages the opposition not to boycott the vote because he said President Buhari's re-election victory will be sweeter if they participate. I caught up with the minister over the weekend in Washington, D.C.
I came here to have a round table with Dr. Peter Pham of the Atlantic Council. Was kind enough to organize a round table for me to exchange views with former ambassadors, seven congressional advisors, members of think tanks, so that I can properly, you know, give the correct narrative about goings on in Nigeria.
Mr. Minister, let's talk Nigerian politics. The elections in Nigeria next year, February. President Muhammadu Buhari has announced he's seeking re-election, but the main opposition PDP, they have many criticisms of the government, including corruption and the country not being safe. They mentioned basically the killings in Nigeria to the point that they don't think that you can have election in that kind of atmosphere. Your comment?
I think the PDP today as an opposition political party is so terribly weakened and they've lost focus completely. You see, let's talk about security. When we came in on the 29th of May 2015, 24 local governments in the northeastern part of Nigeria was under the effective occupation of Boko Haram. Today, we can say with all emphasis that not one single inch of Nigerian territory is under the occupation of Boko Haram. We've been able to reclaim every inch of land. We're able to recover and resettle hundreds of thousands of Boko Haram captives. Roads in the northeast have been opened, reopened. Banks have reopened. Schools have reopened. And you see, we are fighting an asymmetric war, a war where the other party does not obey any rules of engagement. But we have been able to degrade massively. They are not a show of strength. On the contrary, they are the last gasp of a dying insurgency. Two, PDP is talking about incessant killings, is talking about, look, we inherited all this, but the good thing is that we are containing them. And it's very important. Part of the thing I came to do here is to give a context to these herdsmen-farmers clashes. We were dealing with the fallout, largely, of environment and demography.
The criticism is that the president is not doing anything about it,
but
because
that is absolutely not true. And they know it's not true. Specifically, for instance, what has the government done? We've deployed what is called a quick response wing of the Air Force to Taraba and to Benguari and to Benue State to ensure that these things are nipping the bud. And that is why the intensity has gone down.
That is why I'm here, to explain that Nigeria is safe. It's much safer than how we inherited it.
We don't know yet who is going to represent the PDP in the coming elections, but it seems that the former Vice President Atiku Abubakar announced over the weekend that he's seeking the nomination of the PDP. In fact, the PDP chairman has accused the ruling party of swimming in the valley of corruption and dragging the nation's economy down.
What economy did they leave when we are coming, when we inherited this economy? I'll tell you. When we came in on the 29th of May 2015, what was the GDP of Nigeria? It crashed from to about 6.5 mm-hmm. in 2011 to about 2.5 in 2015 when we came in. So recession was obvious. So we entered recession in the second quarter of 2016, which is the credit of this government. But within two quarters, we came out of recession. Today, we've been able to double the foreign reserve from $23 billion to over $47 billion, despite the fact that we sold, you know, crude at $28 a barrel at the point in time. For almost, you know, 8 years mm-hmm. of PDP rule, they were selling crude for over $100 a barrel. So with much less, we're able to achieve much more. In the area of, you know, agriculture, for instance, is on record that while they were there, importation of rice, we were paying $5 million every day for rice importation. Today, we are proud to say that from over almost 480,000 metric tons of rice that was being, you know, imported from Thailand, it has gone down to less than 24,000 metric tons. Today, we have been able in less than, you know, 3 years, be able to build 750 kilometers of new road and revamp 650 kilometers of new road. We've raised power generation from 2,690 megawatts to over 7,000, you know, megawatts. We know our strength, and we know that we have invested in the people. So we know that those that we have worked for are solidly behind us. If these criticisms are really, really damaging, or if they are really true, we'll be worried. But we are not. And I can tell you that I speak for millions of Nigerians who've appreciated what we've done. I'm speaking for millions of Nigerians in the Northeast who for 6 years were unable to even go home because of Boko Haram. I'm talking about, you know, hordes of Nigerians whose children couldn't go to school for 6 years in the Northeast. I'm talking about Nigerians all over across Nigeria whose children with 8.2 million pupils, with parents and relations whom we feed every day in Nigeria. I'm speaking about, you know, farmers who have made so much under this administration.
So what would you say to those who say they might boycott the election if the security problem is not solved? What do you say?
Frankly speaking, I would rather encourage them to work harder on their campaigns rather than boycott it, because our future will be sweeter if they participate in the election.
Lau Mohammed is Nigeria's information minister. He was speaking with me from Washington, D.C. Officials in the Democratic Republic of Congo are expected to announce this week an end to the recent Ebola outbreak in the country. It's been more than 5 weeks since a new case of the viral disease was identified. Mohammed Yusuf reports.
If no more cases are found, the Congolese Health Ministry will declare the country Ebola-free this Wednesday. The recent outbreak in the northwestern DRC killed 32 people. Another 21 people were infected but survived. Those numbers are small compared to the 2014 Ebola outbreak in Guinea, Liberia and Sierra Leone. That outbreak of the virus affected more than 28,000 people and killed 11,000. Florent Del Pinto is the head of Congo's Ebola response team. He said health workers used the lessons from the 2014 outbreak to contain this one.
In West Africa, around 20% of new contamination were due to unsafe burials. So we have been very active in ensuring that all suspected cases were benefited from safe and dignified burials to limit the risk of contamination. Community engagement is also something that is very important, to be able to sensitize the people on what is Ebola, how to prevent from getting Ebola, and what should be done when some signs or symptoms are detected.
Meanwhile, the World Health Organization has given an experimental vaccine to people who came in contact with those who came down with the virus. The UN agency has so far treated more than 600 people. Del Pinto warns the deadly virus could still re-emerge.
The challenges are important here because, first of all, it's endemic, meaning that Ebola will reappear in the future here in the RC. So one of the current challenges is to get ready for the next one and to try to increase our capacities, increase our readiness to be able to be ready when it comes.
The DRC has seen a total of 9 Ebola outbreaks since the viral disease was first detected in Congo in 1976. Mohamed Yusuf for VA News, Nairobi.
The ancient and iconic baobab tree, with its distinctive swollen trunk, grows in many parts of Africa. But the trees rising out of the savannah in southern Africa today are dying at an alarming rate. Scientists are not sure why, but many suspect climate change is to blame. According to a study published in the scientific journal Nature Plants, 9 of the 13 baobab trees between 1,000 and 2,500 years old have died over the past dozen years. Viewer's Deborah Block takes us to Limpopo province in southern Africa, known as the land of the baobabs.
A villager in South Africa's Limpopo province ponders over a dead, collapsed baobab tree. The trees are a lifeline for many who live here.
I'm very confused when those trees died, because we get help from this tree, healing, and then food we get from these baobab trees. Shelter we get from baobab trees.
This tree is estimated to be 1,200 years old. It is among the scores of baobabs that are dying at an alarming rate in South Africa, Botswana, Namibia, Zambia, and Zimbabwe. Scientists say rising temperatures and drought caused by climate change may be the reason.
In the southern areas of the baobab distribution, we see very few juvenile trees, but at the same time, we're losing the mature trees. So what we're probably looking at here is a shift in their distribution in response to climate forcing.
Baobabs are the largest flowering tree in the world and can grow more than 20 meters high. Their trunks and branches store large amounts of water sucked up during the rainy seasons. People use the tart fruit to make nutritious drinks and a yogurt-like food.
It's like a type of medicine. We get energy from that thing.
Baobabs are part of a larger ecosystem that supports countless animals, large and small.
It's so important to the life of the people and the ecosystem. Perhaps it's time we start to, you know, put those species on the list of restoration priorities, because we can plant species like, it's very easy to grow the seed of, to grow a plant from the seed of baobab for those who know to do it.
Efforts to restore the ancient baobabs are growing more urgent, as the magnificent trees that have stood here for millennia slowly disappear. Deborah Block, VOA News.
And that's it for this Tuesday, July 24th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post-editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer John Ellison, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing you a very good day.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.